What's going on, everybody, and welcome to episode 51 of the Mental Dive Podcast, where we talk anything and everything sports psychology and mental performance. I'm your host, Taylor Staden. Wow, this is a real fun one today with CEO and founder of Mission Elite Performance, Raheel Manji. Raheel is a former Division I tennis player at the University of Indiana, Bloomington, and now has shifted his focus and his efforts into the coaching realm, coaching NCAA professional and junior level tennis players at the mere age of 24 years old. Throughout the interview, me and Raheel get into a wide range of topics, including coaching by example, how he helps foster deliberate practice, as well as contrasting the likes of ice hockey and tennis, and how he tries to bring the strengths of ice hockey into his tennis coaching, as well as so much more. As always, I would appreciate if everybody could check me out on social media, Instagram, Twitter, at Taylor Staden, that's at TaylorStaden. Enjoy the episode. So we have a fun one on the docket for today. I haven't had a tennis-themed episode since Christian Lacoseljic. So today I'm pleased to be joined by Raheel Manji, the CEO of Mission Elite Performance based out of Pickering. He is also a former Division I tennis player at the University of Indiana, Bloomington. Raheel, how are you doing today?
Doing great. I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for asking. It's this online world gets a little taxing sometimes. So always just trying to find ways to stay mentally fresh and so that way I can re-engage and really be dialed in for when I am working. So yeah, it's been interesting.
Yeah. So interesting. You mentioned Christian Lacoseljic. He's one of the guys in Mission Elite. He's an absolute stud. And Christian is someone, well, right now he's playing the top position. He's the captain at Penn State, and he's having a hell of a season, I think. Watched his match, some of his matches, and he's just playing with a ton of composure. But, you know, Christian specifically in just diving into a topic of mental toughness, I mean, you've known him for how many years, I'm not sure, but from what I know of him, when I think of, and I've told my staff this, when I think of an ideal guy from a mental standpoint, that comes to work in the way that we want to, it honestly is Christian. And I'm not sure if you have an idea, knowing him from before, kind of where that background came from.
Christian, you know, when I think about Christian and all my years knowing him growing up, I just think of a phenomenal athlete. Mm-hmm. He's literally good at everything. It was frustrating at times because we played rep hockey together when we were younger. And then he probably hadn't touched a hockey stick in years. And we actually played ball hockey in gym class. And he was just lighting it up. And I'm like, what's going on? This isn't fair. You know what I mean? So... but in terms of that mental toughness, I'm not sure, but again, like there's just a guy who's committed to his grind, right? Like he'd be the guy leaving school early to go train and do tennis all the time. So, I think a big part of mental toughness is just being able to be dialed into your process and really understand that every day that you go to train is not going to be necessarily your best day. You're not always going to want to go, but just showing up at the very least is a win. And right. Some days, anything above that is just extra.
Yeah. Yeah. And he definitely is, you know, dialed into the process, but also his mentality day in, day out, like, you know, the guy never complains. He's always ready to work. And that's a tough thing. You know, people have off days, people have bad days. Christian doesn't have too many of those. You know, he's always ready to go and he's always ready to work. And I think that's what's kind of got him to the level where he has, you know, to be a star at, you know, one of the best schools in NCAA. It's no surprise. So yeah, it's interesting how the paths kind of connect through him there. And you knowing him from a different aspect of his life as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. And speaking of stars in Division I tennis, like I mentioned, you were a really good college player yourself. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background in tennis and what got you up to the point of now being the CEO of Mission Elite Performance?
Sure. So, when I was 15 years old, I entered the pro circuit, became the youngest pro in singles and doubles in Canada. And what happened is, you know, I got opportunities to go in a couple more tournaments, but I actually, hurt my hip really bad. And I go into the doctor's office. They say, you got 5 more years left to play. I said, no, that can't be. That's a joke. But just to be safe, we decided to go into the NCAA and secure a degree. You know, my manager at the time said that was was the best option. And I went into the NCAA, and, you know, I'd always been a big fan of culture, of team, of group. My favorite sport was hockey. It's always been, it's in my life. And I really loved it. It was unbelievable. The team tennis, the unity, and it really brought the best out of myself. And it was hard, you know, to capture that when I turned pro out of Indiana. But I always knew I wanted to, when I finished tennis, I wanted to, you know, applying and, you know, I'm still not done, but I wanted to bring a team aspect to it all. And really, even in the way we train, in the way we, even in individual sport, in an individual sport, I felt like group was the best way to get the best out of our players. It's always been the best way for me. And there's, you know, a ton of studies on that prove that. But I think in individual sports, we kind of overlook that, and we want to get our guys used to being individuals. But, you know, you're way more productive in a group environment that's pushing away.
Yeah, I find that one of the really interesting things about having a team and a group when it comes to tennis, because like you said, sometimes you're playing singles and that's purely an individual sport, you versus the opponent. You know, sometimes you play doubles, so you have a teammate on the court with you. But tennis is one of those interesting sports where you're within a team environment and a group setting, yet you don't actually compete directly with each other. You might practice against each other and train. So would you mind expanding on that a little bit about why you think the team and group aspect is so key when it comes to tennis?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've always believed, you know, there's one thing that I think back when you asked that question. It's when I went to Oklahoma, I told the guys, you know, I said, I want us to be the ultimate competitors. That's our identity. I want us to be the most competitive guys in every building we enter. And that's actually one of my rules, one of my 17 principles at Mission Elite, is that, you know, you are the best competitor in every enter. And so, you know, when you're kind of by yourself, you know, you think you're pushing yourself. You think you're pushing yourself. And when you go in a group, you see other people pushing themselves way harder. It's like when you're running, I don't know if you ever ran track, but, you know, the toughest position is always in the front because you don't have a target to chase. And what the people around you really help you do is show you with their own individual skills how to be better in that area. So I want a team approach in everything we do because, you know, you're going to have strengths that I don't have. And if I'm around you and I'm locked into your strengths and we're in a good cohesive partnership, I can, you know, that a little bit of that can rub off on me. On the other hand, a little bit of my strengths could rub off on you, but that wouldn't be the case otherwise if we didn't connect. And so, you know, in an individual sport, you can use everything for good or for bad. You know, you could use a team for good or for bad. It could bring you down. It could bring you up. Right. It's really what type of person you are and what you make out of it. So, you know, our intention is to make the culture really strong, to recruit the right way, and to surround everybody within Mission Elite around winners, first of all, but around people that are lifting them up. We want to highlight the strong qualities that want to rub off on each other. And it's, you know, it's an individual sport, but you find that there's a lot of similarities in hockey, for example. You know, when you play hockey, you got a captain, you got an assistant captain, you got a line one, line two. Everybody wants to be on line one, right? Everybody wants to be the best. When you're in tennis, you got a position one, position two, position three. Everybody wants to be the position one. Only one guy. I always say only one guy on the team is probably, if you take it from a superficial standpoint, is only ever going to be happy, and that's the number one guy with his position, right? And it's in hockey too. I'm sure you've seen it. Guys want more playing time. Guys want more, you know, attention. The same, you know, and the challenge in both team and individual sports is that you can use group to lift you up, but where can you, you know, how can you connect the environment, the culture in a way that's really uplifting and can maximize the best out of everyone, you know? And I'd love to hear kind of your thoughts on what were some of the strengths, like, you know, what were some of the pros in being on your teams, and what were some of the cons that you felt being on your team that maybe you would have if you had a chance in individual sport? Like, let's twist it here. Let's hear what your thoughts what you missed out on, what bugged you in a team environment.
Okay, right on. So I'm just going to mention something quick before I answer that question, but I will get to it. Sure. You know, it's interesting you mentioned the fact that we might think that we're giving our 100% effort, but oftentimes that's not really true. I do this exercise. I've done this exercise rather in groups before where I ask everybody when they're sitting down to put their hand up. Right. And everyone just, and like, give your full effort. Okay, everyone raises their hand, kind of like this. And I'm like, no, like try harder. And so right. People start standing up and I say, no, like seriously, try harder. And they start getting on their chairs. And the purpose of the exercise is to show that as humans, we're not wired to give our absolute 100% effort all the time. It's not natural. Our body's job is to really do the absolute least amount of effort in order to achieve a certain outcome. So being in that team environment then, like you mentioned, is really important because then you can start to set up these accountability partners.
Right.
And you can have these people really push you and call you out when maybe, you know, they very well know that they've seen you work harder before.
You can give more. You can. Yeah. And I'm here to show you. And wow, I mean, that's a great point. And when you talk about that, I think about why it's so important to coach by example. You know, these coaches, they sit back and all they do is feed. Get in there. If you want a standard within your team, get in there, put your basket to the side and show the gun. You think they're not giving enough effort? Get your ass out there and prove it. And my coach at Indiana did, and at Oklahoma actually, in fact, did an unbelievable job of getting their ass in there and leading by example. I mean, and I see that not be the case in a lot of coaches. You know, they want to sit back and eat their fries while they're telling their kids to go eat a salad, and that can't happen. But that's exactly it. So, you know, it starts with leadership, really, and you don't get leadership individually. You've got that's a great point, psychologically speaking, that you try to achieve a goal with minimum effort, you know? Great point, Taylor.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, now you just reminded me of a book chapter I was reading last night written by Jean-Francois Menard. It's called Train Your Brain Like an Olympian. He was actually discussing the fact that himself as a consultant, as a mental performance coach, has to be a high performer, right? Why should he get the privilege to work with world-class athletes and people if he's not going to be that himself?
Right.
So like you said, if you're a coach and you're just sitting back and you're eating your fries, maybe everyone else is eating a salad and sticking to their strict diet, it's going to be really hard for people to want to buy into you and trust you because they want to see that you yourself are going to give that effort and you care that much too. So I think that's a great point you made. And then just getting back to your question about what did I maybe miss out on when it comes to an individual sport?
Yeah.
There's this great mantra, right? In sports psychology, probably the biggest cliche. And we say control the controllable, right? Focus on what you can control and try not to focus on what you can't. But that's so difficult sometimes in a team sport because there's sometimes where you might care so much, right? Yes. And others might not really care as much as you.
Right.
So I think one of my biggest challenges with playing a team sport is that sometimes I would want to be really dialed in. Like I was one of those kids growing up where like I would get called out because I was trying too hard in practice.
Yes.
Like I loved being dialed in and working hard.
Yes.
And so one of my biggest frustrations was the fact that others just didn't care as much as me. But then that directly impacts me because the results of a team sport come from the collective effort. I think that now you got me thinking more into tennis where when you're in that group, you can help push each other.
Yes.
But you pushing your teammates isn't necessarily going to impact your performance, right? Maybe by you pushing them, they push you back, which helps you. But it's different from a team sport like hockey, where you pushing your teammates help you get your outcome you want. But you pushing your teammates more in tennis or an individual sport doubles the side would more so help just your teammates, right? It wouldn't even directly impact you.
Yeah. So let's dive into that a little bit. Okay. Sure. This was a huge problem of mine. I struggled with this as a player. When I went into team environments, you know, I was always a very obsessive, intense, you know, I was all in, I was obsessive about, you know, you go in a team environment and here's the toughest part. You could be pulling your weight. You could be, you know, doing everything right. And you go and you have a great season. You have a great individual, even in hockey, right? You have a great individual season, but you don't come home with the cup and you're pissed off because your teammates, you know, like your teammates, if you're the number one guy on the team, okay, there's a reason you became the number one guy on your team. There's a way of living that got you to be the number one guy, but you're going, your worst, you're going to have your 12, your 13, your 14, you're going to have your benchers, you know, and there's a reason why they haven't cracked the top. So it's extreme. And now if you're a top guy, scoring all the points, you're a highlight guy, and you had a great season, how they act does represent you. You know, you go home. I remember you go home. If you had a great season and people are asking, how did the team do? You know, and you're like, yeah. I mean, you know, and so it became really tough. And I used to tell, and I really was, you know, I was a pushy leader, to be honest, as a player. And it put a lot of stress on me. And as I came to mature, I realized, you know, you can only do so much. I think the best thing to do in players in positions that are frustrated with their teammates is you've got to learn to let it go and just lead by example. Encourage them, but don't force. Because if you try to force your teammates to do something at a higher level, but they're just not in that mindset, to be honest, it ends up putting a toll on you. It ends up stressing you out. And it will end up, hurting your performance. So the best thing you can do is to, as a leader, as a player leader, not a coach, because that's a different story. Coaches have to find a way to connect that. I mean, that's a coach's position. But as a player in a captain's position, I think the best captains lead by example and encourage, but never get to the point of forcing their teammates to try to be great. Because when you get to force, now it affects you, and you're still a player. You still have to perform. So it's a load. It's, you know, it's tough, but you got to learn to let go. Such a challenge, because they represent you.
Yeah. And I think even furthermore, when we talk about leadership, you think about an effective leader. An effective leader doesn't necessarily, they don't do the work for you. They help you get the most out of yourself.
Right.
Right. So really, if a leader has to force something on you, odds are they're probably not too effective of a leader.
Yeah. Right?
The best leaders, you know, even when we think about what motivates athletes, right? You know, you want to think about self-determination theory, right? And you think about the fact we want to give athletes autonomy, right? Choice. Yes.
Right.
So if you're trying to force something onto a teammate or an athlete, you're not giving them choice. Mm-hmm. You're likely to make them less motivated.
Yeah.
So instead, you want to give them choices, right? So it's important as a coach too, as I'm sure you know. So when you think of workouts, right, we're not always the most motivated to do a workout. Yeah. But if we're given the choice of two workouts that essentially give us the same result as an athlete, then why would you not give an athlete a choice? Yeah. And it's the same thing as a leader too, right? Like if you want to get more out of your teammate, give your teammate a choice.
Yes.
Right? I think it's really important.
And that was that, you know, you pointed out, and to be honest, as a young captain myself, I really struggled with that. You know, I grew up with coaches that were, you know, shove it down your, and I was compliant to it. I really respected authority. And when I became a captain, especially young, I was quite, I was like, no, there's one way we're going to do this, and that's it. There's no option. And it really, you know, it was the right thing to do, but you're right. It wasn't as effective. And as I grew into a leadership role, more and more got comfortable, I realized, and now, you know, when I talk about forcing, you know, when I talk about pressure tolerance and pain tolerance, two uncomfortable ways of training that we try to train our players with at Mission Elite, I put in the bottom of each, approach towards those philosophies that it's got to come from the player. You know, it's got, like, you have to encourage them, but don't force it, you know, because they've got to be ready and willingly, you know, engaged to take it on. Like when they are ready to walk up to the plate, that's when, you know, you're on the right path. But if you have to drag them to the plate, that's not it. So it's amazing how you say that, because it resonates so much with me and my style of leadership in the beginning in leadership roles, and how I've had to almost, you know, I'll always have that part of me for sure, but I had to balance it out and really kind of, let it go a little more. And we all, I think to be a great leader, you have to grow into it. It's not always natural. And it's amazing. You know, you would definitely deal with that every day in every sport, no matter individual or team, how to be a better leader when the team represents you. Like Connor McDavid, great, one of the greatest players in hockey right now. How does he find he must be so frustrated.
Yeah.
Why don't you just tell me, like, a little bit of your thoughts on that Connor McDavid situation.
Well, I think the Oilers are starting to piece it together a bit more. They've gotten, some of their younger players are getting better, and they've gotten better depth. But I think even further, when you look at maybe a player who's frustrated as a young leader, would be like Jack Eichel in Buffalo.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, that's like true. I don't know. There's a good example of somebody who's absolutely pulling their weight and more and is not getting the results that perhaps they deserve based on their effort. And I'm not suggesting that the other Sabres players are just mailing it in or anything like that, but there's a situation where a guy or a player is performing at an elite level and not even remotely getting the results. He's been in the NHL for 6 years or so now.
Yes.
And some people consider him even a top 10 player in the world.
Right.
Like he's insane. Oh, yeah.
I had him my fantasy 1 year.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's tough to get him in my league, but, yeah. And there's a good example of somebody who is performing really well, but not getting the results they want.
Team results.
Yeah. So, and it comes to a point where like, when do you have to change your environment?
Yeah.
And as a young captain, that can be very, very challenging. Like he's only 24 years old.
Well, yeah, you know what, Taylor? Sometimes it honestly is change your environment. Sometimes it's like, you know, like captain, coaches, general manager, owner, you know, you're not in the highest position here to really have leverage over your teammates. So I think sometimes it is a question of, you know, and we talked to our NCAA players, if you're doing everything right, and you try to encourage your teammates to follow path and follow suit, and you've led by example, and you're still, you know, not getting the team results you want, you've got to look at changing your environment, or you've got to see a change in your coaching staff, the leader, the management, to be honest. You know, I think you're right. I think sometimes it is a change of environment.
So Raheel, I must ask you, when you think of mentally tough tennis players, mm-hmm. right, who stands out to you and why?
You know, in a sport like tennis, you get 1 month off. Who is somebody that I have felt watching that has brought it every single day, mentality wise, to the best they overall could, is probably Rafael Nadal. You know, don't really see him complain too much on the court. You know, we're talking all on the court, just purely performance. And it's why he's one of the best in the world, in my opinion. You know, he brings it consistently, and it really is a mentality. And I tell my guys this, I say, you know, if you're going to play, you know, you're going to play 100 matches a year, you're not going to play your best all 100 matches. You're not going to execute your best all 100 matches.
Yeah, you're human.
Right. But how is it that these guys are so consistent in their results at the top? And if you know you're not going to execute at your highest level every single day, it comes purely down to mentality. Like, who shows up in peak mental shape at a higher level more often than anybody, you know, not? And I think that's across all sports, all domains, is who are the guys, you know, that are so consistent, that show up for every fight, for every, you know, match with the right mentality. And that's really something I would be more proud of than anything. I'd take a bad player that shows up every single day mentally in peak mental performance shape over a great player that's absolutely up and down with their mentality. Yeah. And the key is, when you have a guy that has the strengths to go and be, you know, has high caliber strengths, can you give them a mentality that shows up every single day, a consistent high performance quality peak mentality? And I don't care if you're in the corporate world or the tennis world, you've got to do that. You've got to be engaged every single day to be a high performer in anything you do. You
know? Yeah, 100%. I think you brought up a ton of great points there. One of them being the importance, of being mentally fresh.
Right.
Right. If let's stick to tennis. If you're 24/7 just thinking about tennis, just like, you're going to get burnt out and you're not able to bring your best consistently.
Yes.
So interestingly, one of the best things you can sometimes do to remain productive so you can be your best in your sport is to get away from your sport. It sounds really, really counterintuitive when you first think about it, but having other hobbies outside of just your sport, you know, find ways to disengage. So that way, when you get back into your sport, you can be engaged and you can really give your full mental effort.
Oh, yeah.
But I think another point you made is you're talking about how can these players be so consistent, like Rafael Nadal, and show up and be close to their best or near their best so often?
Right.
And I think one really important thing to highlight when we talk about professional athletes is the fact that they still get nervous.
Yeah.
Right. Pro athletes still get nervous. Like, there's no way a professional tennis player can go into their first Grand Slam and not be nervous. Of course you'll be nervous. Nerves are really just your body's way of reminding you that you care.
Yeah.
Right? It's trying to get you ready and prepared. Mm-hmm. Right. So for example, when we get butterflies in our stomach, the reason for that is because our body is actually taking blood away from our stomach area and putting it into more important muscles.
Right.
That would be important for our survival, because that's right. Where our brain's wired.
Right. It's so, keeping you sharp.
Exactly. It's keeping you sharp. Yeah, so
get nerves is a bad thing. Yeah.
Well, that's how society often teaches us. Nerves right. are a bad thing. Just, you know, like they say, don't be nervous, which is ridiculous. Of course, we're going to be nervous. We want to be nervous.
Oh, yeah.
So in saying this now, the point I'm getting at is that it's not that pro athletes don't have nerves. It's that their relationship with nerves, it's much different. They they understand strategies and ways to use their nerves to their advantage and understand where they have to be in their zone in order for them to be consistent and be their best.
Right.
I think that's huge. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as a player and a coach.
Yeah. To tackle your first point, you know, I just read a book called Peak Performance. And it basically spends the whole book, you know, I picked the book up thinking it was going to be talking about, you know, different things, but it spent a huge majority of the book talking about rest, you know, and getting away and how to manage burnout, because it's true. Like, in, you know, if you have a career, hockey players, tennis players, they play till they're 35, you know, that's a lot of years. So like, you know, it's not easy, you know, it's not easy to go play, do something the same every single day for 35 years. You have to manage your burnout. And one of the key points in that was, he said, try this, you know, next time you feel burnt out, overwhelmed, take 8 days off of tennis or your sport.
And 8 days off.
Yeah, 8 specific days off, and it can actually revert. They say 8 days can be enough in a lot of cases to just get, like, you don't even look at a tennis court, you don't even pick up a racket for 8 days.
Interesting.
And it's a great way to, and maybe you don't come back burned out anymore. You know, sometimes you think, I'm done, I'm done with tennis. Take 8 days off, you know, try it, right? You might as well try it first before you quit, right? So it spent the whole book, you know, talking about balance and getting away, and, you know, and then obviously you've heard a lot of, and I think why Christian's having, you know, some success and able to maintain his consistent work ethic in terms of tennis is that he played hockey for how many years? So the multi-sport athletes past 13 in the NCAA ran a study, you know, they're the ones that have the most longevity in terms of passion. Yeah. So it makes, you know, it makes sense how Christian continues to be able to get back to work. I mean, the guy, and then also why he's so athletic. I mean, he's diverse in multiple fields.
Insane athlete.
Right. Insane athlete. And I don't think that's just talent. I think that's, you know, partly the strategy of his approach moving forward. And then, you know, to answer, you know, the next part of that, you know, I would talk about a little bit about how do we get the best out of our players in every moment that they tackle whatever they do. And that is where we talk a lot about quality, max quality with max quantity. You know, what is the number of hours that you can spend at your best quality, right? Before, you know, like, we do not want to drop quality. So that's really the primary target. So, you know, if we start where you can put your focus at a high, deep, engaged level for an hour, okay, we stop after an hour. Now, if we can work towards 2 hours, okay, but the idea is we don't get past the point of where your quality gets sloppy, because when you start to get bad habits and then you start to practice bad habits, you start to wrap the myelin around those bad habits. So, you know, what is the max amount of time we can spend with quality? And that is our real objective. So if that's 2 hours, you know, okay, that's what it is to start. Eventually, we'll want to get to the point where we can expand it and expand, you know, our level of quality per volume capital. But, you know, that's kind of our approach with that.
Yeah, interesting. And that point you just made about the quality practice, it actually reminded me a lot about the importance of deliberate practice,
mm-hmm.
right? So not just showing up to tennis and just going through the motions and not having any intentions or goals for the training session. I think I was reading a book a little bit about deliberate practice, and I can't remember quite all the details, but more or less they're saying that it's not even about that old 10,000 hour rule to become a master and expert at something. It's about having hours of deliberate practice where you're actually have intention set and you're doing things with a purpose, right? Practicing with a purpose. The piece about deliberate practice, I think, is really, really important. And I'd love to hear about how you help your players practice deliberately, because when I think about deliberate practice, I think about, you know, before a training session, set one or two intentions or goals for that session. You know, what are you looking to get out of that? Because that's not only helpful for having more quality practice, but it's also helpful for just keeping your motivation up and realizing, okay, that although I didn't maybe get the results I wanted, I still had this intention. I still had this value, and that's within my control.
Yeah. We tackle it from a three-step standpoint. So here's how we tackle it. We go, you know, in tennis, you have the ability to kind of do this a little bit better than some other sports, to be honest. So, you know, how we tackle it when we take a approach is we go, compete. So let's say we're introduced to a player. Yeah. We want to see them compete. And we're going to write down things. We want to see exactly what we need to target and tackle. Okay. So once we're, you know, we spend some time watching them compete, you know, in actual matches, then we can start to target. And so that's the second phase, target. So now we have so much that we want to, you know, take out of the matches that we can target. You know, it's very productive, right? It's very productive. And we're not just going through the motions. You know, like, it's terrible when it gets to the point where it's like, okay, so we know we got to hit forehands. We know we got to hit back. And so let's just go do that. Let's just go prep. Now, like when you get out of the competition phase, like, you are juiced up on what you want to target. And like, we go and we target that until the juice runs out. And then what we do is we throw them back in competition. Because it's just a cycle, right? Like, okay, you targeted what you need to. Okay, we're getting pretty solid in these. Okay, let's go and compete. Let's see. Okay, because there's going to be so many things that come out of the competing. So that keeps us fresh. And, you know, if you're training for too long, you know, you start to wonder what you're training for, and the practice becomes really inefficient, right? Unproductive. So that's how we try to tackle it in a three-step phase. Because God, I mean, you see these guys compete there. I don't care what level you are. There is so much you want to just get to right away. And it's great juice, you know, it's great juice. Quality. Yeah. Players can feel when, you know, their coaches are juiced up, wanting to target and tackle something. And when they're just coming to practice just to get their reps in, like, we don't try, you know, that's that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I like that you mentioned this three-step process and how you kind of shift them to different stages based off of where they're at, maybe by their energy levels, because, and this ties back to what you were saying about having that kind of limit on how long you can provide quality practice.
Right.
Because when we want to transfer skills and practice to our matches, we have to be able to do that at a similar level. Mm-hmm. We want to make those practice environments as similar to game environments as possible to promote transfer, right? Yeah. That's why there's some really good practice players. And that's why some athletes can do things great in a practice, but oftentimes it's because the environment is not close enough to a game environment.
Right.
Right. Definitely. So, and the way this ties in is that by putting them into situations where they can give their full effort and make it as similar and deliberate to a game environment as possible is going to help them get those quality reps in, not just reps, quality, deliberate reps. So I love how you brought that up.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, And you know, on the other hand, is that everybody, you can master a drill, you know, you can master something in practice and you could be a terrible competitor. So like, that's why we're so big on even practice matches. Cause like, I don't care how well you do a drill. Like, I really don't. Like, if you can't put it together in a match, like, who cares if you're the best in every single drill that's broken down and then you can't even play, like, you don't know how to figure out how to win a match. So like, why don't we spend our time actually like trying to figure out how to solve the game, like the game piece. There's, you know, it's like that is a big thing. I'm not a big driller, and I'm big on competing. You know, I think you can use drills and put them in a competitive format so that you figure out how to compete. Like, you know, I am so big on competing. Like, I want our guys to go and to try to win the coin toss. Like, I want them to try and go play cards at the end of the night with their buddies. I want them to figure out how to become winners. Because I feel like if you know how to win in one category, it helps you. Like, you know how to win in the academic field. You know how to win in the, it helps you. You're just a winner. Like, you're just an all around winner. So, like, yeah, let's not be a good driller or a good, you know, out of the bucket all the time, but let's go be like, I know some players just, they look so bad on the surface, but they come out with one of the best seasons in history. I mean, you know, I had some teammates like that. They were just ugly players, but God, they knew how to win, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Big time. It reminds me of this, this point made in this book called The Brave Athlete. And I love this book. It's, yeah, I've taken so many lessons from it. And the point he made in the book was that one trait of highly successful people, whether it's business, sport, you name it, is that they find a way to get it done.
Right.
They're those people who are always problem solving or always trying to find ways to still get to that goal, despite the fact that barriers present themselves, despite the fact that adversity hits. They're the ones who find a way to get it done, despite the situation, despite what may be going on. And I think that's huge. And I think that's it, like what you mentioned is just so true.
I had one question, one last, you know, I had a question for you in regards to, you know, hockey, like, you know, you've had exposure to other sports too. And, you know, one thing that I've always, you know, with your background being high, I'm loving this, you know, and I taught this across is the locker room in a hockey environment. You know, even a football or basketball environment is much different. There's a toughness between these contact sports that really takes a, you don't feel sorry for yourself approach. And people could say, you know, that's the, what's it called? The
masculine.
Yeah. Like, no, people, you know, they say like that's promoting, you know, masculinity is toughness. Well, but you know, there's in sport, it's a you're in a competitive world. You're in a competitive environment. It's dog eat dog. And there's a difference between a locker room in hockey, football, contact sports, you know, and non-contact sports. And I always believed having some exposure into the team world that we wanted to make, you know, our environment, our culture, we wanted to take the strengths from hockey, for example, okay, and put it into tennis, and then take some of the strengths from tennis and put it into hockey. You know, like there are definitely strengths and one of them strengths and weaknesses in each, and we want to take the strengths, put them together. But one of the strengths that I found in hockey culture, in a hockey locker room, is the toughness. I mean, like, you know, it's a tough culture, and you know that nobody feels sorry for you. It's not okay to cry. You know what I mean? And you would be surprised. You see some people cry in individual sports more so out of feeling sorry for themselves. Like, you know what I mean? Cause you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're saying. It reminds me of a episode I had recently with Greg Camarillo, who used to play wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins. And so we think about contact sports. He talked about why he believes the man up culture works in football, but it doesn't work in other areas of life. And I was curious about why he said that. So, cause I saw him mention it on a tweet. So we went into it, and he actually said, because he believes that football is the ultimate team sport, right? You have so many players there. Like, you have rosters of 50 some odd players, I believe what it is. And so he said that so many players, especially in a, you know, a tough guy sport, so to say, they don't want to bring their baggage to the field or to the practice facility because they don't want to bring their teammates down, right? They don't want to be that reason why, you know, that well-oiled working machine has a kink in it, right? Why, which we could argue on both sides is helpful or not helpful for different reasons, but purely from a performance standpoint, he was arguing that just since it's such like a team environment and there's so much sacrifice going on and players have to like consistently play through injuries. Like, you think of an NFL offseason, it's basically dedicated to recovery and rehab. So I think that's an interesting point you made though, where you might see people in individual sports be a lot more likely to express emotions because perhaps they're not as worried about the effect it might have on the rest of their team, right? Because team results, team outcomes.
Yeah. That's it. And we have to learn how to go into a team and not be selfish, you know, because in juniors, you do play alone. And then it's a real translation, transition, to go into a team environment. And I think as tennis players, we have to learn how to go into a team environment and how to fit culture. You know, when you go football players, hockey players, they have spent their whole life in that team environment since they're young. You learn, right? Every year you're exposed to it. You learn a little more, you get a little wiser, smarter, and better at being inside a team. And, you know, well, how do you get the most out of your team in team tennis? Well, you have to understand the value of culture. You have to understand the value of togetherness. And that is a difficult concept that I think it is unreasonable to expect tennis players to understand in just their freshman year. So that is why there has to be an even more emphasis on trying to teach freshmen coming in from tennis the value of team, how to fit within a team, what it means to have strong culture, what it means to be somebody inside a strong culture. It's a huge point. So from leadership standpoint, from coach's standpoint, in an individual sport that's overlooking a team, you have to work even harder than a team management or team staff to get that across to your players that are incoming your team that have spent their whole life individually. Like, you sure as hell need to be having leadership meetings. You have to be having team meetings that discuss how do we build culture, you know, and you have to put an emphasis on that because, you know, they're really jumping into this, you know, they're really jumping straight into the deep end. And, and what does that mean? I mean, it is important to be one with your emotions, with your feelings, but maybe it's not beneficial to the team. So, you know, when you talk about the off season recovering and spending time, you know, that could be a time for emotional recovery as well. But I think that when you enter the team environment, don't be the guy sulking. Don't be the guy feeling sorry for yourself. You know, you could go do that, you know, in the off season behind doors, but if it affects the team, like, you don't want to be the Debbie Downer that goes into your team and then drags the team down. Like, you can't. It will hurt. It will hurt the culture. It'll hurt everything. Put that away and deal with that on your own and actually target that in your off season, perhaps on your own. But when the bell rings, you are tough. I mean, in the middle of a match, you can't be feeling sorry for yourself. And it's the same with the season. In the middle of the season, like, the season is just one big, when the match rings, when the game, you know, is on, you're a beast. You're a warrior. You don't have
ego.
You don't have feelings. Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you got to be like that rock throughout a whole season. And you know what, when the bell stops or when the match stops or the season ends, you can take a breather and deal with those things. But I truly believe when the bell rings, you are the best, toughest, strongest version of yourself. You don't show weakness. And that is something that we need to get across and build that environment of toughness. That's what I want to do at Missionally, is really try to build that environment of toughness. So to have guys like you come in and give your input and your perspective and your understanding of it is huge, because it sends a message from a different standpoint, from a different perspective, that, like I said, we want to take strengths from every area and put it into our program. And then that's what you kind of offer, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. So you mentioned this, how you're trying to put together a team of specialists to help different areas and really promote this holistic approach.
Yes.
Would you mind telling the listeners a little bit more about what you got going on at Mission Elite Performance?
Well, the base behind it all is that, you know, at Mission Elite, we're dealing with some of the best in the country, some of the best professionals, even on an international scale. And to be at the most elite level, you can't just be a specialist in one area. You can't just be a good tennis player. You've got to be a good athlete. You've got to be good in your diet. You've got to be good in your sleep. You've got to be good in your physicality and your recovery. It is a full, absolute full approach. And you know, what happens is that there's one coach and he wants to, you know, he thinks he knows how to manage all these categories. And you see that in a lot of cases, they don't believe, like, they think they can handle it on. Like, but you didn't spend your whole life in the area of physical, improvement. You didn't spend the area in nutritional improvement. So, you know what, like, we're putting our egos aside at Mission Elite and trying to get specialists in every area to be there for each one of our guys when they need, because I'm not going to pretend that I know how to run you through a yoga session, Taylor. I just, so that's the idea, is you get specialists in every area to look after our guys and make them high performers in all the surrounding areas along with tennis, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And I like what you mentioned about putting egos aside, because I think that's an important one promoting that interdisciplinary environment where you have people who can work together. It doesn't have to be obviously separate. Like the mental performance consultants can work with the nutritionist. The nutritionists can work with the with the NPCs and so on, with the physical trainers and the recovery specialists and coaches and you name it. So I think finding ways to create that environment is really important, because it gives everybody the sense of trust and knowing that there are people here that are legit and know what they're talking about to help me be my best. And I think that's a huge part of helping athletes achieve their excellence, whatever that may look like for them.
And we're kind of going with that, with assembling a staff and a team that's more of the corporate sector of Mission Elite. And it's incredible how team circles to anything you do. Like we want to approach our staff as one unit. And I'm going to sound like a football coach now, but it's true. We want our team to be one, you know, we want our staff to come in as one unit, and we want our staff members, the individuals, to understand that every role to play. So don't overstep your role. And it's in a team. I'm talking with, you know, a head coach the other day. I said, everybody's got a role to play. You know, the top guys got to bring high standards. The lower lineup guys got to bring relentless effort. And the, you know, the guys on the side have to bring an unbelievable connection to the team. And then you have to put it all together to have a mission focus. I mean, I literally just did a talk on that. But what you understand is that everybody can play their role. And then you can actually mix those three, four components together. That is the ultimate, you know, that's the ultimate package. Yeah. But at the very least, play your role, you know?
Yeah. And that's all you can really do.
Yeah.
Play your role. Control the controllable, right? Yeah. That mantra. Coming back in. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. Like, you know, I can't overstep my boundary in one area, you know, when I have a specialist there to do it, you know, right? You know.
Yeah, absolutely. So Raheel, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. Thanks again for joining me. Would you mind sharing some of the best ways to get in contact with you and, you know, ways that maybe players could learn more about Mission Elite?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best way to learn about Mission Elite is through our Instagram, at Mission Elite Performance. We also have a Facebook up that's Mission Elite Performance. And then, you know, if you want to get a hold of our staff directory, email missionelitepermformance@gmail.com. And then from that point on, we can get you connected to whoever you want to connect to, whether that's me or any of my team members. We can help you from there.
Fantastic. So, I'll put all the information in the description of the podcast too for easy access.
Appreciate that, Taylor.
Yeah, hey, no problem.
Such a pleasure. And you know, always, you know, I learned a lot from you today. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people that can learn a ton more from you as time goes on as well.
I appreciate that, Raheel. What a fantastic interview. Another big shout out goes out to Raheel Manji for joining me for episode 51 of the Mental Dive podcast. One thing I do want to mention is that I am now taking on clients for mental performance consulting. So if you're an athlete, you're a performer who would be interested in having me coach you and help you improve on your mental game, improve on your consistency, improve on your mental toughness, you name it, please do reach out. Instagram and Twitter work at Taylor Staden. That's at TaylorStaden. Or you can email me at TaylorStaden1@gmail.com. I'll include this information in the description of the podcast for easy access, as well as a link to a form where you can apply for this mental performance consulting. Anyways, have a great rest of your day, and I look forward to sharing another episode with you all soon. Until then.